That's composer and alto saxophonist, or saxophonist, whichever you prefer, Arthur Blythe with Down San Diego Way. It's from his 1979 album, Lenox Avenue Breakdown. That year, he also released his highly praised jazz tribute, In the Tradition. Down San Diego Way also features James Newton on flute, Bob Stewart on tuba, James Blood Ulmer on guitar, and Cecil McBee on bass, Jack DeJohnette on drums, and Guillermo Franco on percussion. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and if it's Friday, it's time to free your mind at 888-874-4888. You're cordially invited to join us for our weekly open forum, where discussion and debate about the issues of the day aren't just features of the program, they are the program. So call 888-874-4888 and present your ideas and opinions to an audience eagerly awaiting them and awaiting also to respond. We are very well-mannered here and friendly and even-tempered. So there need be no fear whatsoever. You can say your 2 cents worth and we'll move on. Lots and lots of things happening this week. And of course, it's all about Trump settling in to his new executive position as President of the United States and putting together a cabinet that so far gives one the shudders. But hey, that's what we have to deal with. And we have lots more, including the word is that the Reverend Jesse Jackson is seeking from President Obama a kind of blanket pardon for Hillary Clinton. I don't know how that is going to work, but, you know, politics, I tell you, it's a really interesting kind of a thing to observe, how people just do what they want to do when they arrive at a certain level of power and influence. And you can see in some cases they use it for good. You know, they really try to do something beneficial for people. And in other cases, they just consider it a kind of rite of passage. And the outrageous things they do are part of the privileges that they, in their minds, should enjoy. And we should just go along with it. We have no reason to put up any resistance to it at all. So we'll see how this cabinet is shaping up, and we'll see what people's reactions are. But most importantly, we really have to get back to the central issue of doing our homework and constructing our systems that serve our needs. Because that there's no evidence or very little evidence that it exists, that we have such a mechanism to tell this juggernaut system to stop when it ought to stop and give it permission to go. We don't have any of that power at all. It's just not in our cards. What are you thinking about the way things are going? Are you feeling any more comfortable or less comfortable? Are you feeling afraid or are you feeling indifferent? Are you getting your act together, doing your homework? This is what I keep asking. Do your homework, because we're going to need people who have done their homework. We're going to need you. What do you think about the times that we're in and whether we will get out of it reasonably unscathed or whether there is a lot of pain in our future? 888-874-4888. Before I take calls, I just want to make a couple of notes. I've been getting so much email. I'm inundated, really. I'm trying my best to catch up. But it's just one of me, you know. I don't believe in doing formulaic responses. I like to really give my own responses to what people are saying. So it will take me a little bit of time, but I will catch up. So if I haven't responded to you yet, please know that you're not being ignored. It's just that I'm having a little time coping with the volume of emails. And I really do appreciate the feedback. Really, really embrace it. And I thank you for your continuing expressions of love and caring and support as I deal with my own challenge. And I thank you so very much for that. It really means a lot to me. And I want you to know that every day I draw on your good wishes to keep me going. So thank you, thank you, thank you, and thank you. Well, we're going to start off with Harvey from Berkeley. Hello, Harvey. Long time.
Yes, it has. And hello, wonderful Eutrice. We all love you very much.
Thank you. Same here.
Well, I wrote a two-minute statement about the coming Trump presidency, and I'd like to read it to you and your vast PRN audience.
Go ahead.
Okay. We know that the fossil fuel industry owns Trump and his administration. President Trump has said that he will eradicate all environmental restrictions against nuclear, coal, oil, and natural gas, which will accelerate climate destabilization and overheat our small home planet, our Mother Earth. In the last 5 years, they were the hottest years in recorded history, causing long droughts, out-of-control forest fires, terrible flooding, as well as larger and more frequent storms, hurricanes, and tornadoes across America and the world. We may have lost the national election to the fossil fuel industry, but we can still take a personal responsibility by voting with our dollars. Now is the time to divest from nuclear, coal, oil, and natural gas and reinvest our money in renewable energy resources like solar, wind, wave, and geothermal-generated electricity, as well as rechargeable energy storage systems and new electric vehicles to protect our precious environment so that we can move towards a sustainable energy future for us, our kids, and future generations.
How does a person, I mean, I agree with what you have written here and what you've just read for us, but how does a person on a personal one-on-one basis, where could a person start?
Well, there are funds that you can join. You don't have to have a lot of money to join funds. Put in a little money every month into renewable energy stocks and bonds through groups and through syndicates. And number two, say you own a home, but you don't think you can afford solar panels. There are solar panel companies now that will install solar panels at no cost and charge you a monthly rate, which is usually much lower than the utility rate. You're now paying for electricity, fossil fuel driven electricity. Those are a couple of the ways we can do it. I can think there's a number of ways, but there's community-based solar where you can buy from one to who knows how many number of solar panels, and the company will place the solar panels on rooftops across America, and you could, over time, they send you back money from the electricity you produce, and over time you can reinvest and build up the amount of solar panels on these rooftops that these companies are putting the panels on. So there's many ways. You can start small, but collectively I think we can all make a big difference in maybe the next time you buy a car, look into electric cars. They're coming within range of normal price, and again get solar panels from a company that doesn't charge money for installing them, and then plug your car into the sun. So there's and also working on like community gardens so that the food you eat doesn't have to travel across the nation before it crosses your table. There's many, many ways of getting involved and making us healthier and happier and helping to slow down the global warming, which is really global. I should call it global baking, which is really destroying our planet. The polar caps are melting, for instance, and when polar caps melt, there's a heavy weight of the ice on the top and the bottom of the world. And when that weight is, the water melts and it's redistributed around the planet, that causes more movements in the Earth's tectonic plates. And when the Earth's tectonic plates move, you get more volcanoes and earthquakes. So it really is affecting us in a major way. Even if you don't think it's affecting you personally, it really is. So I say that, you know, you have to be very conscious of where you put your money now, especially at this time of the Trump presidency, where the fossil fuel industry owns the White House.
Well, I do know, and already in the Caribbean particularly, we're seeing some very troubling signs, because it's a very interesting geographic area, because you have the melting ice caps in the South Pole meeting the water coming north toward the equator, and you have the from the North Pole, the ice caps that are melting, they're going south. And it's causing a lot of disturbance, not just flooding and the like, but a lot of disturbance, including hurricanes, because we have the tropical waters mixing with the ice, the cold waters, and you get a lot of turbulence generating out of that. So I know in the Caribbean people have been watching this, because the water levels, in fact, are rising, and we have the life of the ocean also being affected, because some of the fish can't be sustained in warm waters, but they are pulled there by the currents, and some of the other creatures who are accustomed to cold water are finding themselves being drawn back down to the equator, toward the equator, where they also are having trouble adjusting.
Yes, as we drive our cars more and more, we put more carbon into the atmosphere. When we use the coal-fired plants, utility plants, oil-fired and natural gas, we're putting more and more carbon into the atmosphere. And carbon is responsible for acidifying the oceans, so that the basis of all the life forms in the ocean can't survive in the ocean. They can't take that much acid. And then that affects the whole food chain. And number two, when we put carbon in the air, carbon is a greenhouse gas, and it absorbs the sun's infrared light and turns it into heat and pushes it out into the atmosphere. So as the atmosphere heats up, it turns out that, like, if we put water in a pot and you turn up the heat slightly, the water starts moving. Then you turn up the heat more, the water starts bubbling and moving around. Well, that's our atmosphere. And as we put more and more carbon into it, it's getting hotter and hotter, and that creates larger and more frequent hurricanes, typhoons, and tornadoes. And again, the heat of all this makes water expand. So the ocean not only we're getting ocean rise not only due to the melting of the polar caps, but the expansion of water around the world. So all these factors, every time you get into a car and drive your car, you think you're not doing anything, but you're adding to the carbon footprint of the planet. So we really have to make changes if we want us and our kids and future generations to survive.
Thanks so much for calling in and giving us another hint as to why we need to pay attention to the environment. Thanks so much. 888-874-4888. It's a little bit more than a week since the great shift over. What are you thinking about the signals that we're getting from soon-to-be President Trump? And how do you think you'll be coping with that? How are you coping now? Are you less disturbed? Are you more focused on where it is you're going, or what you have to do to make an adjustment, not just because of Trump, you know, just in general? What do you think we are facing here, and how are we proceeding with the task at hand, which is we have to build systems from scratch for ourselves individually, and for our communities? We have to invest in systems that will deliver to us what it is we want, what we think will work. Nothing is guaranteed, but if we don't do something, it is guaranteed that we will face really, really bad times, no question about it. I'm looking, for example, at indications as to how communities are responding and how people in communities are responding. At first, as you know, there was this incredible alarm and lots of fear. But as we see the days go by, it doesn't necessarily change our attitudes, except that we should be becoming more and more focused about what we have to do. What is the response that we're going to give the system? What is the response that we have that would help us get through it? We are stuck with it. We can't undo it unless by some major miracle and upheaval, the Electoral College does some kind of strange bit of math and declares Hillary Clinton the winner. That is not likely to happen. But I'm concerned about whether we are moving in the right direction, whether this, in fact, is a wake-up call for us to get serious about devising systems that will help us. It wouldn't solve the problems of, you know, every problem that we're facing, but we should have systems outside of the system that would help us get through it. And beyond that, to help us get a hold of the power that we do have, because we do have power. One of the lessons I think we ought to have learned from this election is that while we don't give ourselves the recognition for the power that we do have, we see how their system or systems understand the power that we have and what they do to go try and get it, to control it, to capture it. We don't think of our power as being worth all that trouble. You know? We don't give ourselves permission to believe that. But the system understands it very, very well. And their future is linked to taking a hold of our power. And we see so many ways in which we willingly yield it. I mean, you look at the Hillary Clinton phenomenon, for example, and it also occurs on the Trump side, how people just gave their power away without demanding anything in exchange for it and without even acting as if they understand that they are powerful, that they are the ones making the difference and making it possible for a particular outcome to occur. Trump understood that very well. His power base is relatively new, an awakened community of people who didn't like politics, didn't want to be involved in politics. They are predominantly white and male and high school educated and uneducated. But they had the power to put him over the top. They didn't quite understand it that way. Many people do, but many people don't. But in any event, they got the message that they were allying themselves with a powerful entity. And they were the difference. Hillary Clinton wouldn't even have come close as she did, without the black vote and the Latino vote, but predominantly the black vote. And there was no recognition on the part, very little recognition on the part of the blacks who did vote for her. And this is typical of the relationship between the black vote and the Democratic Party. Blacks just don't see this as a power statement. They see it really as a personal choice. We like Hillary better than we like Donald Trump. But it is about power. And there has to be at some point a recognition of that and understanding the value of that. Look what happened with Bernie Sanders. You had people giving him power, raising him to a level that he just would not have been raised if he were left on his own to build his own base. But the power came to him. They gave it to him and kind of lifted him into orbit. And look what he did. So we have to come to terms with this thing called power and not be afraid to address it. From Montreal, Randolph, you're on the air.
Thank you very much, Utrice. I was a bit hopeful when I listened to Trump, because for the first time I've ever heard a politician mention that there were third parties or independent parties. And wouldn't it be just absolutely fabulous if he followed through and brought in people from the independent parties to be advisors or even on his cabinet? Wouldn't that be fabulous?
It would be great. However, we have to look at history. And history says, reserve your judgment. Don't be so eager until you see what the total picture looks like. And also because of our understanding that individuals in a cabinet don't necessarily mean that there's going to be a change in the system or the philosophy of that administration. We see it clearly with Barack Obama. Here is a guy who, you know, everybody accepts as a very, you know, dyed-in-the-wool liberal, but and he has some people who would fit the profile of liberals or progressives, even, they would say. In fact, Hillary Clinton herself said she was a progressive. But look what we got. So we always have to be very careful that we look for hopeful signs,
sure,
but we are mindful of the fact that they still are operating within a system. Their system has to have, all systems do, a philosophy that undergirds what they do, how they think. And it also is about a system that, coming in brand new, is also trying to find itself, because he's putting a whole bunch of people together who do not have a history of working with each other, but who have a shared history of being on the very conservative side, in fact, very right-wing, to be very honest, and we'll see whether they recognize a need to be a little bit more panoramic in their view and have that reflected in their administration. So I think he will make an effort, because enough people are telling him so, including world leaders who are apprehensive. And I see where it concerns him. The opinions of people concern him, because he, being as egotistical as he is, he also wants to be known as a hero. So he wants to have his administration please or undertake programs that will be very successful. And so in that sense, he's open. But I have no illusions at all about him, you know, just transforming into a bleeding heart liberal, as they say.
Right. But at least he would have an opposing point of view. I mean, this guy deals with all kinds of problems, too. But I'd like to say another thing here quickly. In a sense, bothers me is this FBI building called the J. Edgar Hoover Building. I mean, can you imagine agents going in every day and seeing if they could change it to, say, the Robert F. Kennedy Building, it would start to bring, instead of the criminal past, a more more humane paths. I mean, and what about universities? I looked in vain for a university, a Kennedy, John Fitzgerald Kennedy University, or a Martin Luther King University, and I couldn't find one. And it seems
they have some colleges and universities have incorporated schools within the university system. For example, at Harvard, you have the John F. Kennedy, the Kennedy Center for Government. So it's been like that, I guess. I don't know that it would. What would, in your view, be the advantage of that?
Well, it would show that the Kennedys and who brought to the forefront civil liberties, freedoms, between nations is possible instead of wars. And Martin Luther King, decency and nonviolence, these were the people that expressed it to the height that is possible to express it. And this would make a difference because people going to it, people mentioning it, would actually bring out a decency and civil rights and humane treatment of people, not violence. You know, these were the advocates, the top advocates. I believe Martin Luther King even won a Nobel Prize. So it is decent. So I think it would start to change people's way of dealing with other people.
Well, don't forget that the Kennedys had a unique way of dealing with other people. They initiated wars that bombed the heck out of hundreds of thousands of people. They were very much into wars. They had a very effective public relations machine that forgave a lot of wrongs that they did, including, by the way, opposing civil rights. Kennedy had to be bludgeoned about it. He was not an ardent and ready supporter of civil rights, neither he nor his brother. So we have that.
But he had the courage to change.
He had the political sense to change. I don't know that was courage. He saw what was coming, and he did the political thing.
Against him. But anyways, that's the way I look at it, because I think that instead of having, there's hope. These people brought a courage to the world. They brought a spark, a lightning that said that not evil has to be the way. We have other ways, and I think that's what they represent. And I would hope that this would happen.
Well, I thank you. Thank you for contributing. Thank you so much. Ed from Queens, what have you to say today? How are you freeing your mind today?
How are you doing, Latrice?
Fine.
Basically, I just wanted to comment on the fact that now I'm starting to see some of the wailing and gnashing of teeth starting to die down, and people are really starting to get activated and motivated towards this new administration that we're getting. But we've got to put away the myths of the past. Just like the previous caller was talking about, the Kennedys, we create these romantic portraits of people, and we miss the truth. The truth is the system needs to be either destroyed or changed. The truth is that I don't honestly believe that we're going to get the results that we need or that we want from this system. It's incapable. Capitalism is dead, and capitalism and this form of government are closely tied together. So the only way to really get the results that we want as far as dealing with humanity, dealing with ethnicity, dealing with fairness, is to get rid of this system. And as long as we hold on to these romantic portraits of people and things and don't look at the whole picture, don't look at how they operated and what they did and why they did what they did because it was political or economically expedient, we're never going to get to that resolution where we can feel comfortable in mass getting rid of the system, even though it's never really been in mass. It's always been a small percentage of the population, and everyone else follows with revolution. But we need to start working on that aspect. Let's look at things as they truly are and not as we would like them to be.
Well, some people would say that exactly what you just said, we need a system that's more humane, more encompassing, more really progressive, if you will, and that these qualities do not, you just don't find them in any government.
No.
Government has its own way of operating, and that people who insist that we ought to have a humane government, a fair government, that these things are themselves illusions, and people need to understand how government really works and what is the role of government and the reality that we are living with this thing called government. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yes, exactly. I mean, government is a business. At best, it's a means to allocate funds, to allocate resources and protections to the people that institute it. But what has happened with this government in particular and other governments around the world is that the government itself gets a life of itself. And then you have the influence of money, the influence of corporations that take away from the primary mission of the government to serve the people. And that becomes polluted and clouded. Like the old saying, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So we need a new type of system, a system that is more based on living a quality of life than acquiring a quantity of money or goods or power. And it's difficult. It's not going to be easy because this system, for one, even with all its faults and all its complications and problems, services a lot of people. And a lot of people feel comfortable in it. So it's going to take time. It's going to take education. And it's going to take a certain percentage of the population passing away to a new generation can come and step into the breach, so to speak.
Where do you think we can find an example of what you're talking about, or something close to it?
Well, something close. I've been in Europe and when I was in the military, and Switzerland, even though it's a smaller country, they seem to be close to that ideal. I don't think you'll ever really get the ideal, but Switzerland, Germany, even though it has its shortcomings, it does have a social welfare program when I was there that really helped the people. That's what comes to mind right now. I'm sure there are other examples or different aspects of the government that work well and other parts that don't, you know, but you've got to combine all these things. If your interest is really humanity, if your interest is humanity, then you're going to work towards that goal. But if your interest is power and increasing your riches, then you're going to be like the Clintons in Haiti, you know.
Hmm. How close do you think we are to getting to move in that direction?
I think the idea is there, but you got a long way to go as a country and as a people. The ideal is there now. This election seems to have pushed some people further to searching out the answers and finding a way to be more just and more fair. But like I always say, when things are fresh, the intensity is there. Let's see what's happening in 2 years. Let's see what's happening next year this time. Let's come back and review, comparing what was happening now and the sentiment and the intensity now, as opposed to what's happening next year in this same time period. That's the only way you can really tell.
Well, do we have to wait till next year, or do you see any system or party or method that has been introduced to America? People may not know of it, you know, by and large, mm-hmm. but it's there. Do you know of any system that perhaps we could build upon that would put us in that direction that you were talking about?
Well, I mean, Bernie Sanders showed that a socialist, no matter how weak, can actually have a political movement and get votes. So that would be a good place to start, looking at socialism, sussing it out, seeing what works, what can't work, modifying it to fit the American experience, that would be a start as far as a new system. But I don't think people are politically educated enough to really get into that. But it's happening. It's coming. And hopefully, I just set a year as a benchmark to see what's happening next year, to see what the sentiments are, to see how people are reacting to President Trump. That's basically why I set a year, like a benchmark. But it could be sooner. But there are things out there. It's just, do people have the intensity to keep them going? There's a lot of good ideas. There's a lot of good groups out there. But do people have the intensity and wherewithal to keep them going? That's what my issue is with it.
Well, thank you, Ed. Thanks so much for calling in and contributing today.
Thank you.
California. Yolanda, you're on the air.
Hey, hi, Yushi.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Fine.
Okay. You asked at the beginning of the show how we feel about President Trump, and to me, I'm not happy with Trump or Hillary. I vote for the third party. However, with Trump, we will have some kind of transparency because the media just don't like him. And with Hillary, there would be no transparency at all because there would be only secrecy like Obama. It's only secrecy. They are all in bed together, the media and the establishment. So what I was thinking by watching the news, it seems like Hillary is not done with us. I was so happy she's out of the way because especially for Haiti, I was thinking, hey, Haiti can get a little room to breathe right now because she's no longer there. But it seems like she's still there. And she's already building up her base with Sanders. He's trying to promote her into the Democratic Party. Sanders, I think, also Jesse Jackson and Charles Schumer. They're rebuilding the base again to just bring her back. And I'm looking at all these situations. The only reason it's kind of not, I'm not somebody who gets easily depressed, but it puts a cloud on my life because I lost half of my friends because I did not support Hillary, and they are saying, oh, you are trying to elect Trump. And I told them, I would rather vote for the greater good. And like I said to you the last time, whatever the vote is going to the Green Party is only uplifting the Green Party for the next 4 years. And I even had issues with my kids, my husband. If I would say something about Trump, he would listen the minute I opened my mouth about Hillary. He starts saying, okay, he wouldn't got the phone on me. And it's bad, And the reason why I think it's so bad, it's because most people are relying on the corporate media. And the corporate media represents 95% of the news people are getting. And that 95% is part of the establishment. And I try to tell them, hey, I'm looking at the 5% who is made of PRN, Chris Hedges, Simon Hirsch, and Paul Craig Roberts, and so many other award-winning, reliable journalists. And these people listening to the 95% corrupted media, they are not listening to the 5%. I used to listen, and I still listen to the 95%, but I listen to the 5%. So when I have a debate or just political discussion with people, they are just staying on the 95%, but I have both. So it's kind of frustrating, and they don't want to listen. I when I used to be part of the 95%, I cross over. I cross over to the 95% because I'm curious. I have an open mind. I want to know more. But most people are not like that. They've been brainwashed by the media, who is very skilled at lying with the government together. So it's hard. It's hard for me to convince my daughter, you know, and her husband. Hillary is bad to the core. She's bad to the bone. Obama is really the worst president, the best actor, the best liar. He will give you a beautiful smile, and he will make you melt. And this is why these people love Obama. They love the look. They love the style. And it's very superficial and shallow. And to me, this is the biggest the worst danger in the world right now is because people don't understand. People are voting against their own interests. They're in the dark. And I don't know what it's going to take to make them wake up. And to me, I am not living in the United States right now. I work, overseas. But if I did, the first thing I would do, because I'm always looking for solution, there is a problem, where is the solution? The solution, like Gary Noel said before, he said it's not going out and do demonstration and said, all kind of stuff. The thing is to, even if it's with five people, you create an organization in your community. You build it up, you know, and you try to connect with other organizations and create something from, you know. So I don't know what you think of this, Yuchit. We're all in it.
I think you're great for recognizing the situation you're in. You're surrounded by people, you know, as to quote the Bible in a way, they are not so blind as those who will not see. That means people make a choice. They deliberately, they become intentionally ignorant. They're not going to open their minds to anything because in their heads, they already know. And those, you still have others who believe there's nothing more that they need to know. So it is frustrating. I've talked about the fact that when Obama was running, and I refused to vote for him. I refused to vote for him in 2008 and again in 2012 because I spotted something about this man that just was so off the charts. And it gave me an inkling that he was fully owned by a system, by hidden hands, and he was there basically to do their bidding and to hold the slot open for Hillary to come in behind him and seize the presidency. I feel that my judgment was right, given, you know, what we have experienced over the last 8 years. But I can tell you, it was very painful. People very close to me in my own family thought that I was nuts and crazy and avoided me because I had a very clear view about Obama that was very different from theirs. So I understand and commiserate with you that when you see things and other people don't see them, it causes a certain amount of frustration, but you have to also give yourself permission while you're feeling these things also to understand why they feel these things. And you just expressed it. You took the time and effort and energy you invested in trying to find out what the truth is. They have not. So you're both acting in accordance with the amount of energy invested in learning about the world, learning about your reality. Those who do not do it have no reason to agree with you. They're content in their ignorance. They're content about it. And you'll just have to learn that you know, you can still proceed with your beliefs. And you just have to have the patience to deal with them. That's it. That's all you can
and
do.
And you, Trace, you know, there was something positive about the Trump candidacy that opened my eyes about everybody around me. It made me see really what level everybody is, how much they understand about politics. Because if you're a supporter of Hillary, it's clear that you don't understand. If you're a supporter of Obama, you don't understand. And even if you're a supporter of Trump, you don't understand. So I see why people are the way they are. It's because, like my husband, I would put a show of your show while you are talking. And I remember there was a time Daddy Sherry was talking about the Clinton Foundation. And she was giving all the great information, the facts and everything. My husband said to me, Does you three ever have anything good to say about any president?
My own family tells me this. You have nothing good to say about anything.
So it was funny. It was funny. And another thing I wanted to point out, you know, in a few occasions, I turn on WBAI. Even then, they are talking in favor of Hillary. I said, oh, my God, what is left, you know? I mean, what's going on? How can people cannot see? Even WBAI, most of the shows are supporting Hillary Clinton, you know? And, you know, I have to be strong, really, to hang on to say, you know, there must be something positive about all of this, you know?
What is positive is that you are becoming more and more acquainted with the reality that we all are living in. Some people, frankly, cannot and will not deal with that because it's too heavy emotionally to deal with. They can't deal with it because they feel helpless. And rather than feel helpless, you pretend that whatever is happening isn't happening. It's like once I went out on a date and we had a flat. Okay. Well, obviously you have to fix it, right? And there's a lot of, I'm observing, there's no movement going on that looks like we are about to get the flat fixed. Now, it happens that I know how to fix a flat. I know how to change a tire. And my date did not know how to change a tire. So that was the problem. So I said, okay, what I will do is I will enter his realm of reality and pretend that I, too, don't know how to change a tire. But there was no other thing like calling AAA or making a move to do something, flagging somebody down, or there was no movement toward the big problem, which was we're on the side of the highway with a flat tire in the middle of nowhere, and there's no movement toward fixing the tire. I couldn't wait anymore. I said, just put the brake on and let's get this thing fixed. Now, do you know that caused a huge problem. But I understood where it was coming from. I made this person feel very inadequate. And it was not my intention to make anybody feel inadequate. It was just that we had a practical problem to solve. We have a flat tire. You ain't making a move to change it because it's clear you don't know how to do it. I know how to do it, and I'm trying to be all diplomatic to give you the space to do your man thing. And then it's getting dark. I am not going to sit on the side of the road with it getting dark and we just sitting there, no solution. So you have to always put yourself in the mind of the other person. What is it that they're trying to tell you, not only to you, but what they're dealing with themselves? When you take these positions because you have gone to the trouble of finding information where you can that you consider to be reliable, and you incorporate that into your reservoir that you are drawing from every day about how you are moving in your world and how the world is relating to you, you are far advanced, far more advanced than people in your life. You have to learn how to handle that, because some people may misinterpret this, that you're just a know-it-all. Or some people would say, well, what you know is crazy. But what
they call me naive.
Well, that comes with the territory. So they have to do something in defense of themselves, because what you appear to know and what you appear to be confident in knowing, they don't have it in what they know. So they would say something like, you're naive, and you better not ask the question, tell me how. Because now that's going to take it to a whole different level, because you're going to put them on the spot. Tell me exactly how and why you think I'm naive. And in the end, you have to come to the conclusion that perhaps it's more important to hold on to these people in your life than to have a fight. You have to make that kind of a judgment on a case-by-case basis. But I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, I had the opportunity to have a job where I have a chance, like 4 or 5 hours a day, to listen to all these great journalists and PRN and other stations. And for many, many years, I've been doing that. And I'm like an encyclopedia of information, like all he called before, and he was talking about, you know, global warming and all that stuff. Until we address the problem of chemtrails, which Gary had a program on the Commentary Hours with Dan Arrington, who is like one of the engineer on geoengineering. He did a lot of research and for many years, and I've been following him, and he put the facts and everything showing if we don't deal with geoengineering, because the weather we have these days, it's man-made. It's not by global warming. It's not a natural environment occurring weather. The earthquake we had in Haiti, I know it may sound crazy, but all people can do is go to YouTube, Google chemtrails, and they have hundreds of documentaries on it. Very reliable information by whistleblowers. And every day they put, you know, only was talking about solar panels, but if we don't get the sun, because they're putting a blanket in the sky every day, the sky has clouds every day by chemtrails, you know, with barium, aerosol, aluminum oxide. And I fly a lot, and I see these planes. They are not commercial planes. They are unmarked military planes that are flying this stuff. And if we don't deal with this, we can't talk about global warming. The people spraying that stuff are the ones who are creating the pollution. Before we can talk about fossil fuels and all these other nuclear plants that are releasing chemicals in the atmosphere, you know, there's so much. You know, what you see usually is not what it is.
But where we are is we also have to look at the rate at which social progress, any social progress is made, it's generally slow because you have to bring people along, you have to educate them, and you have to anticipate that they will resist. You have to anticipate that it will take a lot of time for things to sink in. So any social movement, you have to calculate that it will take time. But this brings us to the end. I'm so delighted that you were able to call in and share your thoughts, but keep faith and continue on your journey, because after all, this is your journey, and you are probably preparing yourself to be a very, very important agent of change. And this is one of the necessary things that you have to deal with people who are distrusting of the information that you have gathered so far, or that even you're making the investment in doing so. But I congratulate you, and I thank you for sharing your ideas with us today. That brings us to the end of the program. Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus is next. You always want to listen to that program. Great ideas. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Have a great weekend with positive people, and we'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.